meet Fatima Abdullah, an accredited practicing dietitian and nutritionist with 10 years of experience in the Zambian and Australian nutrition industry. She runs Eat Smart Nutrition and Dietetics, a service created on the importance of educating and empowering everyday people to achieve their dietary goals. She uses science-based information and strategies to ensure long-term success. And in today's episode, we are going to talk about eating well while living a busy life, being intentional about change and diet fads. Welcome to the podcast, Fatima. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. First question for you would be, can you share a little bit about your journey to become a qualified dietitian and explain exactly what that is?
Yeah, sure. So I actually went straight into nutrition when I graduated from high school. I did really well in home economics and I loved science, and it was kind of like the perfect combination of the two. While I was studying nutrition, I thought, okay, this is great, I love it, but I want to do more. And then I contemplated becoming a doctor and I was like, no, I can't do another like 6 years on top of this. And then I saw that we had an option to do a master's in what we call dietetics. And that's basically going in and learning more about human anatomy. There's a lot of psychology and getting involved in understanding kind of human behavior more, as well as understanding how different diseases worked and linking that all back into nutrition. And that essentially, I guess, is what a dietitian does, is they've got that expert nutrition knowledge where they're able to translate all that science of nutrition and put it into very practical kind of. So yeah, my journey was pretty simple in the sense that I just kind of knew what I wanted to do after high school and jumped straight back into it, and then studied it in Australia, where I was living at the time, at a pretty good university too. And yeah, it was pretty much just smooth sailing in terms of actually getting into it and running through it. So nothing too complicated, just, you know, the actual choice was the right one in that moment. So it was very smooth.
For you and what you do specifically, what exactly are the kinds of like services that you offer? What are the kinds of things that you do?
Yeah, so my career has been quite diverse. So I've actually dipped my toes into many different fields within nutrition and dietetics over the last 10 years. I haven't really been one of those dietitians or those nutritionists that has kind of stuck in one corner. I've done many, many different things. And one of the biggest reasons for that is honestly living in Zambia and being one of the only dietitians in the country. I've kind of been stretched pretty far in the sense of like always finding different places and offered different places to work in different ways. So my dominant purpose is, and the dominant thing that I do and probably what I love the most, is my one-on-one sessions with people. That's doing an assessment, learning all the bits and pieces of the puzzle about them, and then going in and giving them this very personalized advice and motivation and education to get them to basically achieve their dietary goals. And it's not always weight-based. You know, that's what most people think dietitians do, is they just put you on the diet and that, you know, they make you lose weight. But we're actually trying to create, you know, long-lasting eating habits that they're going to set you up for long-term health. Or, you know, I think a lot of my clients are referred to me from doctors, and those doctors either want me to help them, you know, with their diabetes or their high blood pressure or cholesterol. So that's the dominant part of what I do, is those one-on-one consults. But then I also do a lot of kind of what we call food service, which is kind of like reviewing menus and creating inpatient menus with hospitals. Like we might generate a particular type of menu for our, you know, clients who are on dialysis or those who are being tube fed, as well as the general population. So I do a lot. Dietitians do a lot of maths. So a lot of calculating and making sure nutrients are very specific and very correct for, you know, people with particular kind of conditions within the hospital. So I've dipped into a bit of that. And then my career also started off in Zambia as a lecturer. So I taught on the first BSc in nutrition in Zambia, which was very exciting. And I taught the first clinical nutrition subjects there. So that was incredibly rewarding and interesting 4 years, where I also kind of, before I branched out into the public space a bit more, where I learned a lot about, you know, just the basic education and academia around nutrition in Zambia. So lots of bits and pieces, but where I am right now is public awareness and one-on-one consults, in the sense that I saw this huge gap in just lack of access to accurate information online, especially in the Zambian context, and I wanted to fill that gap. And so that's where I'm driving a lot of my energy these days, is just going directly to the people and providing them the information and the services that they need. And then one other area I do is kind of like corporate wellness, which is a similar kind of thing, you know, public education, but obviously more specific to the corporate setting. So yeah, many, many hats. And that's just a few of them. So quite a diverse role.
That's quite amazing. I like the corporate situation, because I think a lot of the times, you know, I think adults in general, once you do have a busier lifestyle or a very sedentary desk lifestyle, the food choices or the behaviors that we tend to adopt are not necessarily the best for us.
100%. And, you know, living in a city, you know, you can see Lusaka sort of becoming more and more urbanized. We have more and more access to very, you know, fast food, processed food. We have more aggressive marketing. We have more sedentary jobs. So the bulk of where my clients do come from, they are very much the atypical, you know, corporate client who is traveling a lot for work and or sitting at a desk a lot. So their time is of essence always, and it's that lack of time that tends to draw them more towards the convenience side of things. So you know, that's also like working one-on-one with clients in the hospital setting kind of pushed me more towards the corporate, to say, wow, like almost every second person that walks through my door is that atypical corporate client who's struggling because of the lifestyle that they have, and they just need the techniques and the know-how and how to work around that lack of time. So yeah, it's a very interesting space to be in, because it's a very specific kind of effect that it has, because it's directly linked to your lifestyle and the choices you make. But then obviously your lifestyle now is it conducive? It's not as simple as I have all the time in the world to cook healthy foods. It's go, 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 and catch your tail every day. So it's an interesting space to be in. I love it.
Chose the name Eat Smart, which I love, because it's like very simple but very also straightforward, because I do think it is about eating smart. But what do you mean when you say eat smart?
One of the biggest reasons I chose that name, and I actually chose it when I was still practicing in Australia, was Bikawa. I noticed with every single one of my clients that handing them a meal plan was not helping them. What was helping them is breaking down and understanding themselves, as well as all the misinformation and overload of information online. And so that's where it kind of stemmed from, because the biggest way that I practice as an individual practitioner is I'm a big believer in, when you walk away with that meal plan or whatever it is, you must understand it and why it is that way. And you must understand what your food is and what role it plays in your body, what function it plays in your body. And so that's a big part of my sessions with my clients, is really empowering them with knowledge, and then them tailoring that knowledge to become something that's specific and works for them and their personality and their lifestyle. So that's where it really came from, was the smart part was around educating people and people knowing what to do and giving them that knowledge through my business.
And you've already mentioned the word lifestyle, which I think is obviously the biggest aspect of what you do, because it has to be overall sort of lifestyle and lifestyle change. So how do you, when a client comes to you, of course, they're already taking the first step and want your help. But so you said you create meal plans. What are the other ways that you get them to understand that it's about changing the mentality and that it's about a long-lasting lifestyle?
You know, I think one of the biggest things, like I'll run you sort of through what consultation perhaps would be like, and it can give you a really good picture of what to expect. But, you know, it's a hard thing to change people. And one of the things you mentioned was they've already made the decision to change. So when people come into my office, it's like they already know that A, there's an issue and that's the reason that they've come. So they already have a driver or a reason to want to do it. So my job is to basically get the pieces of the puzzle, understand, you know, is there any medical history, any medications? What is their social life like? Do they exercise? Do they sleep well at night? Do they have digestive issues, allergies, intolerances? I have a whole host of assessment questions that I do with them. And once we run through all of that and we look at what their diet typically looks like, their favorite foods, the foods they dislike, you know, what their relationship is with food. We also look at things like, you know, have you tried any diets in the past? Because this is a big one for me. Because if someone comes from like a background where they've been dieting, you know, excessively for a long time, they've got a pretty bad relationship with their food. They've got these big, you know, food rules and labels, and they're often really over restricting themselves as well. And so sometimes my sessions are even focused on what we call motivational interviewing. So I do a lot of motivation for behavior change so that we can actually, you know, we make these goals, you know, we teach you what you need to do, but can you implement them? Like, my job is also to hold your hand and make sure that, hey, if I'm going to tell you to eat more vegetables, what's the process to get you there? I got to make sure they taste good. I got to make sure you have time to do it. So when I give those specific pieces of advice in my sessions and provide them the education that I mentioned earlier, and I make sure I go into the specific details. So what people take home is, yes, an eating plan that incorporates all of that, but they also take home a lot of resources, and they have a lot of accountability, support from me in the following you know, sessions, as well as in between sessions, where I keep checking in and go, hey, how you going? And, you know, what's happening? And are you doing well? Do you need anything else? And in my follow-up sessions with them is when they come back and they go, right, I liked this. This is working. This is not. I'm struggling with this. I need more help with that. And it's a little bit of a journey. And when you have me as an accountability partner, I think that's one of the biggest times I see success in my clients. Because when you're trying to change a habit, it takes time. And there's a lot of like psychology in it. Because at the end of the day, eating is a behavior. And, you know, we're born eating or drinking or from our moms, but we're not only getting nourishment from them, we're also getting support and comfort and love, you know. And so food is not just food. There's a lot associated with it, you know. There's nostalgia, there's culture, there's emotion. So a lot of the sessions are breaking down all of these and their individual personalities to make sure that, okay, I give you that meal plan, I give you the education, but now let's make it specific to you. It's personalized and it's tailored. So that would be probably the easiest way I could kind of explain, is just like, that's what a session's looking like. It's so much more. And it's the conversations I have with my clients that are the most thought-provoking and the most, you know, motivating in terms of initiating change with them. So yeah, I hope that gives you some more insight.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. That's so amazing. And I totally agree. I mean, especially when it's anything that has to do with behavioral change, there has to be accountability. So it's really great that you offer that support to your clients.
No, I was just going to say, there's a lot of, you know, different things out there in terms of diets, and I guess the diet industry is something that's loud. You know, it's a $1 trillion industry, and it's based off people's emotions, right? Or a very aesthetic driven. And so most people are really like put into a very fear-mongering situations where they kind of think that they need to go on a detox or on a keto diet or whatever trending diet it is to be skinnier, or in order to be healthy, you must look a certain way. And in my sessions, I'm also breaking down these stereotypes and these social stigmas that we put around what is healthy. And with most of my women, you know, just recreating body love and body image and what is health realistically, and really reminding people we come in all different shapes and sizes. So I think that's one of the area that I'm pretty passionate about in my sessions too.
Oh, that's so powerful, because that's so important. I mean, when I was younger, yeah, I struggled with like body image issues and even disordered eating, and you know, so like, yep, food for me, yep, is like a thing, and sometimes it's a thing that I have to be very sort of conscious of or pull myself back when I'm doing certain, yeah, behavior. So that's really cool that you do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and not everyone realizes that, you know, just scrolling on social media and just seeing this these constant ads or whatever is setting them up in a way where they're changing their view on food, and they're putting so many rules and restrictions, and it doesn't always leave them with the healthiest relationship with food. So yeah, it's a powerful industry.
What makes Zambia different in the way that we do eat? Or like, because for me, when I think of Zambia, even just traditionally, or things that people eat, yeah, in the village or even in the city, maybe less so now, as you said, because we have fast food, I actually think of like so many healthy options, so many vegetables,
yes. Yes.
So many great things. So what about Zambia makes the way that we eat a little bit different?
Yeah. You know, one of the biggest reasons I love this space is, you know, if you go back, as you said, to the original Zambian diet, the traditional Zambian diet, it's fantastic for you because it is rich in so many different types of plants, so many different types of, there's such a big diversity in the different kind of vegetables people are eating, as well as all the different kinds of beans and mushrooms and fruits. And if you look at that diversity that we have, it's so good for you in so many different ways. And the diet is simple as well. So it's not like we're using abundant amount of ingredients. The way that you're cooking is quite simple as well. So when you're trying to give diet advice as well, it's quite easy. Like, I find it's very simple. It's just a little bit of tweak your cooking method, or get the right portions, have a little bit of extra veggies, choose the better quality, you know, in Chima, or choose the better quality rice. It's not overly complicated compared to like a Western diet, where you've got such diversity in terms of processed foods or additives or all of that kind of stuff. So I always remind people, and this is one of the biggest, like, I guess it's my motto for my business, right? Or my vision is showing people how to eat healthy with affordable and accessible foods, and showing them that you don't need the latest diet product, or keto or banting product or whatever it is, or gluten-free product in order to be healthy. You actually just need to understand the basics of eating the food from which the land you live, because we're never going to be telling, you know, the Italians not to eat pasta, right? So we shouldn't be telling Zambians not to eat Nshima, right? And that's the thing that makes me sad, is there is this misconception that, you know, the traditional Zambian diet is not good for you. And you will see that more in the cities, because they think, you know, Nshima is bad, we shouldn't have it. As soon as people want to lose weight, they want to cut it out. And I was like, well, no, it's not about cutting out the foods you know and love and grown up with. It's about knowing how to choose the best quality and stick to the right portions. And that makes a world of a difference. So I guess that kind of highlights a little bit more in terms of, you know, the actual traditional Zambian diet and how it's so simple. And it's one of the biggest reasons that I started my social media, was also to try and give diet advice that was specific to Zambian foods, instead of going online and reading about salmon and asparagus to be healthy, you know. So it's definitely something that's been fun to work with and so exciting to teach people.
Yeah, because I've noticed that on your page, and like, it even just reminds me or gets me excited when it's like mushroom season. I'm like, oh yes, I have so many options of different kinds of mushrooms and what different kinds of ways I can incorporate it, not just in a traditional meal, but maybe take that mushroom and put it in a more Western meal and still enjoy the flavors of it. So Yeah.
And there's some great, on social media, there's some great Zambian, home chefs who showcased some of these ways of preparing the foods. And I love following them because I also learn along the way too. So it's more just knowing where to access the information, I think is a lot of the time important, because it's sometimes people just don't even know where to start. But there's a lot of people out there who are interested in teaching, and it's just knowing, okay, where do I go? Who do I follow? Who's got the advice that works for me and is specific to Zambia? So it's booming a lot more, the health side of things in Zambia in the last 2 years, especially since COVID, that online scene is becoming bigger and it's exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say, I think I discovered you during COVID. I discovered a lot of the same home chefs you're talking about who are showing you how to prepare traditional food or how to, do certain things. I was always intimidated by making certain mushrooms. And then, I followed one of the chefs and I was like, oh, it's not actually that easy, that tricky. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a space that people probably it's going to start becoming more and more of a go-to place for people, because I think COVID's just shifted everything. Everyone's now actually looking online more than before, so it's been a positive change in a lot of ways for a lot of us.
Yeah, so you spoke earlier about busy people in the corporate sector. Whether they travel for business, they travel for pleasure, whether it's local or overseas. Have you had sort of consultations with those kinds of people? And what are your thoughts on being able to maintain, the same sort of lifestyle or just healthy eating habits while you're traveling? Because I know, again, it's a thing of, oh, well, I'm staying at the hotel, let me order the room service. Yeah. And maybe, you open the room service and that might be a more limited menu than if you actually went downstairs and went to the buffet. So what kind of tips and tricks can you sort of help our readers with?
Yeah. So to answer your first question, I do get a lot of clients who travel for work, in the sense that, they might be a half of the time during the month away and the other half time back in the office. And it's something that they will often say, okay, but when I go there, I have limited access, because a lot of the time maybe the company will be paying for accommodation and food is included. So one of the biggest tips that I give people is, first and foremost, having the right habits, as in working on your general eating habits, will be probably your biggest foundation. Because if you accept that travel is something that you do often, you're aware and you can prepare for it. So you can have habits making sure that, you're drinking water regularly and you're not always reaching for something more calorie loaded, like your juices or your alcohol or whatever it is. So it's not to say that you shouldn't have those, but liquid calories, I notice often when you travel, tend to be something that add up quite a bit. Depending on how often you travel. So I always tell people, rethink your drinks. Think about if you're drinking for thirst or if you're drinking for enjoyment, and kind of reassess and keep track of the total as well, because that's one that can often add up, right? And then sleep is a big one. So if traveling is tiring, it can also completely change the way that you your hormones behave, and your hormones are involved in your appetite as well. So you'll often notice that if you're losing sleep or if you're jet lagged or something like that, then that can often be something that will impact your hormones. So some people will find that if they haven't slept well, they're hungrier than normal. I know I'm one of those people. And others will find it the other way around. So keeping an eye on your sleep as well as your stress is a good one. So kind of, just as much as you can, kind of prioritizing that can really help in terms of your overall appetite if you're frequently traveling. And then if you can plan ahead, by all means do that. If you've been to this place before, and there's going to be a buffet, you can kind of anticipate the kind of foods that are going to be there. So maybe what you would be doing is kind of saying to yourself, okay, my goal is I can't change what I can access, but what I can do is I can control what goes onto my plate. And one of my favorite little examples is the plate model, which is essentially showing you that, you know, half your meal is coming from veggies, a quarter from good quality carbs, and a quarter from, you know, lean proteins. And I use that model with my clients a lot because it's kind of like this amazing little summary of a balanced diet. And when you're going to the buffet, if you're going to be having that little picture or that little portion in your mind, it can totally change the nutrition you put onto your plate. So you can still access those the foods that are there and still eat the foods that are there, but the portions and the amounts you have of the different things can make a big, big difference. And then, you know, again, it depends how far you're traveling and so on. Some people can prepare themselves in advance. If they know on the plane they're not going to get healthy snacks, they might pack some of these things, especially if you're traveling with kids or something like that. If it's going to be road travel, again, take your cooler box with you, put your water in there, put your fruits. You know, traveling in Zambia is so fun because you can see all the you know, subsistence farmers and so on along the roads where you can stop and see their local produce and take it, taste it and buy it. So support local along the way as well. You know, that's a great way to kind of like fill yourself up on healthy snacks as you go. You know, grab a cob of roasted maize or some fresh, you know, cassava or whatever it is. There's always people selling stuff on the side when you're doing road travel, and I love that about it. It's so very adventurous trying new food when you travel. Yeah, those just having a little bit of understanding of what your food is and how it works in your body and which ones to choose can also help you a long way in terms of making those decisions. And then, of course, you know, last thing I would add on is if you have, you know, the option to choose where you're going to eat from and it's within your budget to kind of like choose your own foods more often, then you can do that as well. You know, go to the local supermarket and, you know, buy your brown bread and buy your fresh, you know, veggies and create your own salad sandwich for lunch instead of having the deep fried chicken at the buffet. You know, there's little things like that you can kind of work on, but a lot of it all comes down to the person and their different access point.
Whether they travel for business, they travel for pleasure, you know, whether it's local or overseas, have you had sort of consultations with those kinds of people? And what are your thoughts on being able to maintain, you know, the same sort of lifestyle or just healthy eating habits while you're traveling? Because I know, again, it's a thing of, oh, well, I'm staying at the hotel, let me order the room service. Yeah. And maybe, you know, you open the room service and that might be a more limited menu than if you actually went downstairs and went to the buffet. So what kind of like tips and tricks can you sort of help our readers with?
Yeah. So to answer your first question, I do get a lot of clients who travel for work in the sense that, you know, they might be a half of the time during the month away and the other half time back in the office. And it's something that they will often say, okay, but when I go there, I have limited access because a lot of the time maybe the company will be paying for the accommodation and food is included. So one of the biggest tips that I give people is, first and foremost, having the right habits, like as in working on your general eating habits, will be probably your biggest foundation. Because if you accept that travel is something that you do often, you know, you're aware and you can prepare for it. So you can have habits like, you know, making sure that, you know, you're drinking water regularly and you're not always reaching for something more calorie loaded, like your juices or your alcohol or whatever it is. So it's not to say that you shouldn't have those, but liquid calories, I notice often when you travel, tend to be something that add up quite a bit. Depending on, you know, how often you travel. So I always tell people, rethink your drinks, you know. Think about, you know, if you're drinking for thirst or if you're drinking for enjoyment, and kind of, you know, reassess and keep track of the total as well, because that's one that can often add up, right? And then sleep is a big one. So if traveling is tiring, it can also completely change the way that you your hormones behave. and your hormones are involved in your appetite as well. So you'll often notice that if you're losing sleep or if you're jet lagged or something like that, then that can often be something that will impact your hormones. So some people will find that if they haven't slept well, they're hungrier than normal. I know I'm one of those people. And others will find it the other way around. So keeping an eye on your sleep as well as your stress is a good one. So kind of, you know, just as much as you can, kind of prioritizing that can really help in terms of your overall appetite if you're frequently traveling. And then if you can plan ahead, by all means do that. You know, if you've been to this place before, you know, and you know there's going to be a buffet, you can kind of anticipate the kind of foods that are going to be there. So maybe what you would be doing is kind of saying to yourself, okay, my goal is I can't change what I can access, but what I can do is I can control what goes onto my plate. And one of my favorite little examples is the plate model, which is essentially showing you that, you know, half your meal is coming from veggies, a quarter from good quality carbs, and a quarter from, you know, lean proteins. And I use that model with my clients a lot because it's kind of like this amazing little summary of a balanced diet. And when you're going to the buffet, if you're going to be having that little picture, that little portion in your mind, it can totally change the nutrition you put onto your plate. So you can still access those the foods that are there and still eat the foods that are there, but the portions and the amounts you have of the different things can make a big, big difference. And then, you know, again, it depends how far you're traveling and so on. Some people can prepare themselves in advance. If they know on the plane they're not going to get healthy snacks, they might pack some of these things, especially if you're traveling with kids or something like that. If it's going to be road travel, again, take your cooler box with you, put your water in there, put your fruits. You know, traveling in Zambia is so fun because you can see all the you know, subsistence farmers and so on along the roads where you can stop and see their local produce and take it, taste it and buy it. So support local along the way as well. You know, that's a great way to kind of like fill yourself up on healthy snacks as you go. You know, grab a cob of roasted maize or some fresh, you know, cassava or whatever it is. There's always people selling stuff on the side when you're doing road travel, and I love that about it. It's so very adventurous trying new food when you travel. Yeah, those just having a little bit of understanding of what your food is and how it works in your body and which ones to choose can also help you a long way in terms of making those decisions. And then, of course, you know, last thing I would add on is if you have, you know, the option to choose where you're going to eat from and it's within your budget to kind of like choose your own foods more often, then you can do that as well. You know, go to the local supermarket and, you know, buy your brown bread and buy your fresh, you know, veggies and create your own salad sandwich for lunch instead of having the deep fried chicken at the buffet. You know, there's little things like that you can kind of work on, but a lot of it all comes down to the person and their different access point.
Actually just had an epiphany moment when you said sleeping patterns and eating. I was like, wait yeah. A minute, this sounds like me.
I know this. Yeah, I'm a big grouch when I don't sleep, and then I'm just hungry like continuously the whole day afterwards. It's like I can eat and then eat and then eat. I'm just not satisfied. I'm like, what's going on today? And I'm like, oh yeah, I slept late last night.
Yeah. So it's gosh, that's so interesting. I'm actually gonna I used to do this thing where I sort of like wrote down in a diary like how I slept, how whatever, but I completely forgot about it. And actually I think I need to get back on it just a little bit so that I can spot some of my weird behaviors, because lately I've not been the best.
Yeah, you know, that's one of my favorite things like that I chat to clients with, because they'll come with these very stringent questions. Is this good for me? Is this bad for me? Is this healthy? And I have to say, you know, you got to put it into context, and you also have to listen to your body. Like, a lot of people have stopped listening to their body and its cues of when it's hungry or when it's tired, when it needs a little bit of self-care. And they're too busy like trying to follow all the bits and pieces that everyone else online says that they're doing. And we forget that we're unique, you know, and some people are going to be needing extra fuel than others, and some people are going to be needing extra sleep than others. And depending on your personality, some of you might need more alone time and self-care than others to function perfectly. So health is never this one-dimensional, clear-cut blanket kind of advice. It's always, we teach you the skills of how to listen to your body to give you that tailored, specific advice that's right for you. So as soon as you start seeing people give blanket advice and very restrictive advice, and they're not asking you questions first and making it specific to you, then that would be the first red flag. I always tell people, it's like, okay, just check your, just start checking where your sources of information are coming from here.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Fatima.
It's been a whirlwind of a journey this year, getting on online a bit more. I also launched my website this month, which was very big, big load of work. But yeah, it's exciting to be on social media and being able to access people directly. I really enjoy it. And thank you for appreciating my content. It's my followers that drive me to keep going and to keep creating and give me ideas and tell me what they want to hear. So couldn't do it without you. So thank you so much as well.
Oh, great. And I don't know how I missed the website, but then I'll definitely also make sure we include a link.
I have my healthy eating book, and that's all on my website. So I think just mentioning my website and my socials is the easiest place for people to come and learn more.
All right. Well, thank you so much. You have a beautiful Saturday.
You too. Take care.
Okay, bye. Wow, I really loved that conversation with Fatima, because we were able to talk about realistic goals and how change is gradual and it takes time. So for those of you who are listening, check the show notes to find out more about her services, where you can access them. Her website is eatsmartdietetics.com. She is on Instagram as eatsmart_dietetics. And she's also on Facebook with her Facebook page, Eat Smart Nutrition and Dietetics. You can like that page as well and reach out to Fatima about more of her services. Thanks for listening to Conversations with Lila B. If you haven't listened to season 3 or season 2 or any of season 1, you are welcome to go back and listen to a couple of episodes. We are all over where you can find podcasts and stream podcasts, from Spotify to Apple to, of course, the lovely platform I'm on right now, Anchor. So please do have a listen to the conversations that we've had in the past, and please be sure to look out for the next episode and continue to join the conversation. Until next time.